So something that I don't freely admit to everybody is that I am, for the first time, getting through the Harry Potter series. All of them.
Oh my gosh.
I'm currently halfway through the fourth book. I don't like reading. We've talked about this.
This is actually a point of pain in our relationship.
I have two books from you.
Yes.
On my coffee table. Haven't touched them.
I know you haven't.
Yeah.
I've committed you several times.
You
will not.
I don't know what it is. But when you do an audio book, because I'm huge into podcasts, that's essentially what an audio book is. It's just this big, long narrative thing.
Yeah.
I am loving it. Turns out Harry Potter is pretty good.
It's a good podcast.
It's a really long podcast. I mean, the fourth book alone is like 20 hours of content.
Gosh.
But anyway, yeah, I'm using Audible and, I'm very much enjoying it. So, I wanted to tell our listeners that we actually have a banner on our website where you can go and if you go specifically through our website and go to Audible and sign up for Audible, then you can get 30 days free. A lot of places you can get 7 days free. You can get a 14-day free trial, but through us, you can get a 30-day free trial of Audible, because then you can try it. You can listen to all 20 hours of the fourth Harry Potter book, and if you don't like it, then you can leave. There's no contract or anything.
So 30 days seems like a lot. Seems like a lot of time to get for free.
Yeah.
Is it because all of the executives at Audible are fans of this podcast?
Every single one of them.
I figured that.
Yeah.
I suspected that. This is proof.
I got a phone call and it was like, hey, we love your podcast. And I'm like, who's we? And it was like, the entire advisory board at Amazon. I was like, that makes sense. I understand.
Amazon?
Amazon owns Audible. You didn't know that?
Jeff Bezos.
Yeah, we jumped all the way to Amazon.
All the time that he's spending on Blue Origin and his penis rocket, he is listening to Nerd Critic.
Turns out he loves Nerd Critic.
He loves Nerd Critic.
And he's like, hey, you know what
we're
going to do?
Every time he takes a Bic to his head, he's listening to Nerd Critic.
He's like, you know what we're going to do for you, CJ? And I'm like, what? And he's like, we're going to give you 30 days free.
30 days free to anybody who listens to Nerd Critic.
The best they can offer.
Welcome to Nerd Critic, a podcast about movies from the dual perspective of critical nerdiness. My name is Jordan, your studied and credentialed critic.
And I am CJ, your resident nerd.
This is an off-the-shelf episode about Mad Max Fury Road.
This movie. I have a question. Usually we start with banter, blah 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 blah. I want to ask a question. Start this off.
I am happy to hear your question.
Before seeing this movie, what was your perception of the franchise and or introduction to the franchise?
Great question. I'd seen parts of. Matt, I'd seen parts of the second movie, and I'd seen all of Mad Max, the first movie, and I don't think I'd ever seen Beyond Thunderdome. So I wouldn't say I was a fan of the franchise, but I was relatively familiar.
Cool.
And then this movie was just like, I mean, the hype behind it was crazy. So I got real excited about it along with everybody else. Why do you ask?
Because when I went to go see this movie, I had just zero. Like, I knew Mel Gibson in a leather jacket was probably about as far of understanding that I had about this franchise. I had no idea. But I was, like, getting into film, and there was a lot of talk about this movie, and I was like, okay, maybe it's worth considering. Did my research. I discover that it's directed by this guy named George Miller. And I'm like, okay, this is an action movie directed by a guy named George Miller. I'm going through. Born in 1945. That's an old fella.
George Miller is 74 years
old. Dude, 74 years
old. He was 70 years old when Mad Max Fury Road came out.
So I'm doing my research, and I'm like, this guy's 70? That's an old dude to be doing an action movie. Okay, keep scrolling through IMDb. Go. He Happy Feet? He was involved with Happy Feet? He directed, wrote, and was a producer on the Dancing Penguin animated movie? That makes no sense. Happy Feet 2? He stuck around for the sequel? Why am I about to go see an action movie by a 70-year-old dude
who has done
two movies?
Babe.
Also Babe. And
Babe, Pig in the City.
Yeah, two Babe movies. I was so confused. And this was like when I was getting into film in the way that like I was trying to like learn about directors and producers and like, you know, whoever's behind the camera, you know, it will affect my expectation of the movie. And I was just so confused that this post-apocalyptic movie that starred Charlize Theron, or however you say it, and the rugged Tom Hardy was this guy, this 7-year-old dude. And I was so confused. And then I went to go see this movie. None of that mattered. I was in love. I saw this movie twice in the theater, immediately purchased it, and I have watched it 5 times since then.
Wow.
I was so into this movie when it came out, and I just, it doesn't, age, filmography matters a little less now because George Miller proved that he can make a dope action movie at 70 years old.
George Miller was 70 years old and made a more muscular, fresher, more inventive, more vibrant and energetic action movie than anybody else possibly this decade.
No question. It was an odd experience, but I was so happy with it.
I watched this movie. I think I've only seen it three times, let's say. And I think the third time might have been this last week when I was watching in preparation for this episode. I'm not a rewatcher much. I don't rewatch a lot of movies. But my gosh, was it a blast to rewatch this movie.
Yeah.
So much so that I'm like, I kind of want to go back and rewatch it again right away.
Yeah.
My wife and I watched the first 3/4 of it together this past weekend. And she almost blew off a really serious commitment to a friend to stay and finish it with me. And she'd seen it before too, but she was like, I forgot how good this movie is. It's so freaking good.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And Tom Hardy, I mean, two of my top three movies, favorite movies Tom Hardy is in. So big Tom Hardy fan here over here.
My wife and I have an understanding that Tom Hardy is one of the few people she would leave me for.
He's on that list.
Yeah. He's on the list of like, you know, as far as famous people go, there's a couple of people I maybe love more than you.
Tom Hardy's one. I mean, it's understandable.
Yeah. Yep.
I mean, I get it.
Yep.
And I love him, and he did great in this movie. But kind of one of my favorite things about this movie is that
it's not his movie.
It's
not his movie.
At all.
It's called Mad Max Fury Road, and guess what? It's not a Mad Max movie.
It's not.
It's a Furiosa movie.
You could maybe pull off like Mad Max Furiosa Road, but it might. Top billing should go to her.
Furiosa Mad Max Road.
Let's not call it that.
Furiosa's Mad Mad Road.
it's a Mad 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 Road. And it was one of the biggest strengths of this movie was that it was because George Miller's actually talked about this before, how he had, you know, he had in Martin Joe that was this kind of in the circumstance an all powerful dude that has these sex slaves. And he wanted it to be like a rescue movie. And he originally had Mad Max doing the rescuing. And then he realized I guess at 70 years old, maybe 68, I don't know, that's probably not the best message for the time that we're in. And it needed to be a woman saving women and not a man saving women, which freaking good on him, because that was one of the things that made this movie.
It was
really cool. And what a casting. The casting choice was so good. She did so good.
Charlize Theron is, she's once in a generation. That level of talent plus beauty is just, you don't get that.
Yeah.
Nope, you don't get that.
You don't get that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's amazing. I honestly don't have like a lot of structure for this episode. I didn't create like a very specific outline because mostly I just wanted to nerd out about it.
I mean, I got a big long list of things to nerd out about.
Go for it.
Okay.
You earned formally going first since you have a list. I just have a bunch of just crazy exclamation points swirling around in my head.
Well, hopefully these
to images and scenes. And
hopefully these your exclamation points can add the feeling at the end of my sentences. I just say a sentence and then you just yell. So the first thing is, I think the first time that I consciously saw somebody behind the camera and just loved them. Don't know who it was, but I just loved them. And like, I wanted to thank them personally, like not in front of the camera, but behind it. And that was the cinematographer.
Oh my gosh.
The cinematography on this movie, I'm in love with. It's so good.
Lots of romantic feelings inspired.
It's just so many romantic feelings. As like a budding film lover, it was just so, it just was so satisfying. And it just, in the landscapes and the colors, man, is color so important? If there's a number one thing I want to nerd out about, it is simply the cinematography. Exclamation point.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh, man. Okay. You say cinematography. I say with an exploding head, production design.
Oh, sure.
What? Nobody ever.
Jordan was just using his fingers to cage his entire head when he said this.
It's trying to contain the explosion within. I worry for my life. it is the most astonishing feat of world building and production design maybe that I've ever seen, just because all of it is dazzlingly inventive. It's not like, oh, and it's just, oh gosh, it's so good. It's so good. I don't even know how to describe it. Every detail, all the way that the wheels come off the cars, the steering wheels come off the cars, and like the way they're decorated, and the way that everybody uses all the materials and the business, and the way that all the cars are like decked out with these, like the spikes and the people on freaking poles with like the spears with the explosives heads and the, I mean, like it on and on and on and on. It's like it is such an impossibly rich tapestry of material and inventiveness and artistry that like it is stunning. And you just can't consume it all. Like you could watch this movie 100 times and you'd still be blown away by the detail.
Yeah.
Like it's yeah. Everything's dialed to 11 in this movie.
Absolutely. And it works. And a lot of times that doesn't work, but it works
because
every element works in tandem with each other so well.
Yeah.
And it doesn't, because like if you pitch it to somebody, if you try to explain it to somebody, it doesn't work, right?
No.
It's like, you got this guy that's like kind of painted white, I think, and he's looks all weird. He's got like spikes coming out of him.
And but tumors on his neck.
And I'm not even talking about him. I'm talking about the guy that's a hard rock that's attached to like bungee cords.
He's bungee corded to a truck. To a building side sound station on the front of like a giant semi truck. And he's essentially...
And as they go to war, he's just playing hard rock music.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of bouncing around and loves bunging.
It. And he loves
and
he, it.
And it just, and like, that makes no sense. That is a fever dream to the max. But when you're watching it, it's just like
of course. Of course like, that's happening.
If he wasn't there, I'd be like, you know what's missing? A guy attached to bungee cords that's playing hard rock music. And it just, and then like, he's not a side thing. He actually fights and gets killed at one point. Yeah. It's not like he's the background. It's
also,
like, no, he's
he
there.
Never leaves his station. No. There's a shot in this movie where he's asleep, hanging from the bungee cords, just drooping. Like, that's the level of detail. Everything, everything is, it's so deep. It's so completely thought out. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Honestly, I could just go on and on and on. Furiosa's like the blackened top of her head, the fact that she's missing a freaking arm.
Yeah.
And she has like a mechanical arm that she uses to compensate, like all of the blades and guns hidden everywhere on the truck and like everything. Everything.
Yeah.
On everything. And on and on and on.
Yeah.
Everything.
And then I mean the story elements that really like add to it that feel like I feel like maybe I'm wrong, but it feels like some of the story elements were added as the production like design kind of came into focus. Like the whole idea of blood bags, right?
Oh,
and
my
just
gosh.
Like I'm bringing this human that's a blood bag.
I'm obsessed with that. I'm obsessed with the fact that for the first like 20 minutes of this movie, Tom Hardy was attached to the front of a like I don't even know, like
He was like that little hood decorator.
Yeah.
Like he was a hood ornament on Dragwire.
He was a hood ornament for 20 minutes of this movie, chained to the car with an IV filled with blood going back to the driver of the car. Nicholas Hoult also, by the way, hats off.
So good.
Just being a maniac in the perfect way. Yeah. Anyway, and just, it's just amazing. It's amazing.
It's absolutely amazing. And like, the cage that felt like Bane, but you know what I mean, and which is great because it's Tom Hardy.
It was a muzzle.
It was a metal
muzzle.
Yeah, and then like,
and him filing it off.
Oh yeah, scene. And then like,
and when he finally gets rid of it, he's like an uncaged animal.
Oh my gosh! And Tom Hardy, who's better to do that than Tom Hardy? And then you got the guy that's like, we need to go faster, so he like sucks gasoline and spits it directly into the engine.
Yeah.
But it's like, hey, don't blow my engine. Just like what? What? And then the like just. Talk about just stunning visuals when the sandstorm and like tornado comes.
Oh my gosh.
And they drive into it.
So a lot of hullabaloo was made over this movie not using a lot of like CG effects or whatever.
Yeah.
And they were like, it's all practical. And yeah, an insane amount of it was practical. Like too much, really.
Yeah.
Like too much.
Like the guys on the poles jumping from car to car.
An unhealthy amount for
humans. Yeah.
Right. Really, an unconscionable amount of it was not CG. But then when they do use CG, boy, do they use it right.
Yeah.
That tornado scene
is unreal.
And the way the camera tracks the like flying debris and then like over top of Tom Hardy and then like down on the other side, and it's just like, you just, the sense of space and velocity is heart-stopping. It is so great.
It's so great. You also have like, I don't know what George Miller did, but it's like, there were times that he would speed things up just like really quick. So like at the very beginning when Max is being chased by all those dudes and he's kind of haunted by, you know, things in the past, but then like they kind of are crawling or like jumping on him and the time is like sped up. Like they're moving really fast and it makes
ramping.
It super creepy.
Yeah.
And then when they spray the silt, like
for
Valhalla and they spray the silver stuff on their mouth. It's not just like a spray paint. It's like he speeds it up. So it's like,
yep.
And it just makes it more like manic.
Yeah.
And you feel it. Oh, it's just some of the little choices and some of the big choices were just so good. Oh, I love this movie.
Yeah. It's like easily in contention for like the best of action movie of the decade. Maybe so far the century.
I mean, the fact that this movie that is entirely an action movie.
Yeah.
It is a car chase in one direction, and then halfway through, it's a car chase in the same direction, just like the other way. Same road, same path, opposite direction. And it won 6 Oscars. Like, that's just
speaking of
amazing.
Speaking of the choice, that grand choice to turn around and go the other direction, which was one of the boldest choice. I mean, this movie, every decision that was made in this movie was bold. And one of the reasons that it was so successful is that George Miller was uncompromising in his vision for what he wanted this to be, and when he shrewdly saw a thing that, you know, the right decision, no amount of like, well, that's not how it's done, it was gonna turn him away from that decision.
Yeah.
For instance, turning around and going the way you came, which is not what you're supposed to do in this movie. Mm-hmm. You're supposed to get to the place. You get to the place.
It's an A to B.
When you get to B, the movie is over.
Yeah, yeah.
If you get to B and the B isn't there, you go farther and you find C.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't go back to A.
Yeah.
And they went back to A with a vengeance, and it was beautiful.
Yeah. I love what that did, right? Because this movie was it was building a world. We had seen sections of the world from previous Mad Max movies. Apparently, I still haven't gone back to see them. But in this movie, we are immediately dropped into this wasteland of a post-apocalyptic, wasteland. And we have this section. We have this haven, this safe haven where there is water, but there's this maniac that's holding it so that he can have the power, right? So it's like, bam, that's the setting. The thing is, when you leave and it's just desert and desert and desert and desert and desert, and then it's muddy, and then there's a tree to help you get out of the mud, and then it's desert and desert and desert, then it like builds the world, basically emphasizing every mile that they go, emphasizing how much of a maniac this guy is for holding the power that he does. Because there is literally nothing out there. And when they turn around and come back, it's just that extra exclamation point on, this is the only place that we can be. Yeah. There's nowhere to go. And so it was a fascinating like study of how to tell a story in an isolated area.
Yeah, absolutely. The world building is nuts. Like being able to, I want to talk about a little bit about the religion that is built around Immortan Joe.
Yeah.
And like this whole, like all the little fragments of dialogue, because there's very little dialogue in this movie. All the little fragments of dialogue, particularly from the war boys as they talk to each other.
Yeah.
And exclaim their objectives and their, you know, mm-hmm. their feelings, all sort of contributes to the overarching model of religion that exists in this world and how these people relate to it. Amazing. Like
amazing.
My favorite, just to nerd out specifically, Witness Me.
Oh, yeah.
Witness Me.
Yeah.
Is just, it's sublime. It is this incredible, it's two words that carry all of the weight and tone of what this religion is to these people. And then to have it turn in the end when he's sacrificing himself, when Nicholas Holt's character is sacrificing himself for the people that he was originally trying to chase and capture for Immortan Joe. And he knows in the moment that the engine is ripped out of the semi that he's not going to make it, and that all he can do is help them escape. And he points at them and says, "Witness me."
Yeah,
it's like that's it.
That's it.
That's it. That's like you did it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
It's just, boy.
I would say that there's a little bit of an arc with Furiosa and Mad Max, but really the character development and arc is with Nicholas Holt's character, that war boy.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Speaking of arcs, the arc for Mad Max is the willingness to accept hope again, which Ooh. Is which is very much it's relatively obvious, but it's beautifully handled.
Yeah.
So in the beginning of the movie, he has this whole monologue about I'm sorry, I totally cut you off.
You're fine. No, I like this.
At the beginning of the movie, he has this monologue about how he has become a creature that is reduced to a single instinct, and that is to survive. Mm. And you see it, like, the way he moves, the way he, like, it's very animal.
Yeah.
And so we're introduced to a Mad Max who is mad and an animal. He is just very, very feral. And you see that everything that he does is based on fear and survival. He's running away from everybody.
Yeah.
And he's trying not to die. That's it. That's his whole existence. And that continues all the way up until he reluctantly accepts that he can't drive the war rig away from these women alone.
Yeah.
It's mechanically impossible. So, begrudgingly, he lets them back on board, and then we see that then his arc begins. So we get to see him slowly discover an affinity for Furiosa, particularly some pity for these other women who are clearly in need of help to escape from their tyrant. And all this is happening, and he is slowly melting, but not quite. So when they get to the edge, his philosophy of don't hope for anything is confirmed, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
And they get to the wasteland of salt, and they all discover, you know, it's like you get the sense that he never really hoped. He was just kind of doing it because, like, he liked these people, so he's willing to help them. But he also never
didn't want to take away their hope.
Yeah. Like he didn't want to hurt them. So he's just gonna keep doing it, and he's gonna try to help because he's, you know, has the humanity about him still. But then when they get there, it's like, I'm sorry, but I told you so.
Yeah.
You know, you should never hope. And then so the big turning moment then for him is a literal turning moment.
Yeah.
It's when he decides to go after them and convince them all to turn around. And it's just lovely. Anyway, sorry.
I was thinking about, so while you were talking, I was thinking about what the arc for Furiosa would be. And I hadn't thought about it before. I'd always watched this movie. I actually wrote down, not all movies need to have a deeper theme or understanding. I'm not sure this movie needed it or asked for it. It's exactly what you want it to be, beautiful and thrilling, which I think is true. But when I'm looking at why it was so satisfying, specifically with the, like, with the characters and why you get so attached to the characters, one, Fury, it's like the, like, sex slaves is a bad thing. And so inherently you're like, yeah, those beautiful women probably shouldn't be there. So them escaping, I'm invested. I want them to escape. I'm on board. And then you have Furiosa, where the peak of your sympathy for her is the wondrous shot of her falling to her knees and just yelling. And that's the peak of the sympathy. And then things transpire, and then they decide to go back the other direction. And it's almost a literal turning moment for her too, where there's a distinct difference between running, and fighting. Mm-hmm. And where she was running, she was running away and saving just a few. But the idea of fighting and actually fighting for something is to save many. Mm-hmm. And so she, instead of running, she fought. And when she fought, she got to bring water to all of those people. And so she, at the end, becomes kind of what seemed to be, like, she throws, is it her that throws the head, or somebody drops the head of Immortan Joe, and she becomes kind of the hero. She's the war hero that everyone is, like, clapping for and is like, yay, because she barely survived. And I just, having it leave like that, I don't know, because George Miller is 74, but I want more. I, like, want more of the story. I want more of Furiosa. I want more of Mad Max. Mad Max leaves at the end, right? So it's like, do their paths cross again? Are we on to a new chapter? But yeah, like it was so satisfying. I just want more. I want another one. I want another one.
Well, keep going back and watching Fury Road again. I do too. I want another one. excuse me. If you look at I never saw Beyond Thunderdome, but you've got Mad Max the original, and then you've got Mad Max 2 the Road Warrior. By the way, the story about this is not an episode about the whole franchise, so we're not going to get into it. And also, I'm not prepared to speak to it intelligently right now. But I have heard, I know enough to know that the story about how Mad Max got created and then how Mad Max 2: The Road Warrior got created is very interesting.
Hmm.
Very interesting, like the whole mythos behind it, and then also the actual way that they got produced and the way that they got distributed. It's very fascinating. So. Worth taking a look at for those of you who are interested.
Cool. Yeah.
Worth a little dive into Wikipedia, if you will. Probably maybe a little bit beyond that as well. Anyway, if you look at just those three movies, though, if you just look at the Mad Max and then Road Warrior and then Mad Max Fury Road, what you see is a fairly amazing a progression from a pretty small indie movie, like a low-budget like very small movie with like Mel Gibson at his youngest and George Miller at his maybe youngest. And they're making this like almost student filmy type, like really small, low budget, you know, cool cult movie to Road Warrior, which is kind of this is embarrassing. I hate it when this happens. I have like the perfect word and then it won't come and I'm like, oh, now I can't.
I found
talk.
Your last one for you. I don't know.
You can't find this one.
Yeah,
for me.
I can't find that one.
I was going to say it's kind of like a messy big 80s action movie. It's a really cool movie. It's really, really cool. But it's like it's so much bigger and so much weirder and so much like more world built than Mad Max. Like Mad Max the original is like mostly familiar, and then Mad Max 2 is like, what is this place that we're at? Who are these people? What is this stuff? This is crazy. And then Mad Max Fury Road is like, again, that again, like way bigger, yeah. way crazier, way whatever. And I'm like, if you do a Mad Max 4, can you
get crazier?
Can you follow the same trajectory? Can you actually get to the next logical point on that graph? And I don't actually know if it's possible. So I'm a little bit worried about the idea of George Miller making a Mad Max movie that is just sort of a more straightforward sequel to Mad Max Fury Road, because Fury Road was so like blindingly surprising, like so insanely fresh and inventive and crazy and cool that I just think you set the bar so high. It's hard to see a sequel doing anything.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And, like, and that makes sense.
It's going to have to be a letdown.
Yeah. Yeah, no, it that most
said,
definitely would be.
That said, the sequel I want to see a war between Furiosa's Oasis and her army that she, you know, her standing army she keeps to defend her Oasis.
Yeah.
And another like big army, and I want to see like a pitched battle.
Yeah,
like, I want to see like a giant, huge.
That'd be
war.
Cool. That'd be cool. That's just like instead of horses, they have these just jacked vehicles.
Yeah.
That are just loaded.
That are just like ramming into. I mean, we saw that in Fury Road, but I feel like I could 10x that, and I'd be so happy. Yeah,
yeah. Well, it's like the whole world building is so fascinating because yes, we talked about how isolated it was, but they gave us like little glimpses into other in Morton Joe's. Right, there was the bullet guy.
Yeah,
it's
just the bullet farm.
The bullet farm, and then the big dude. So it's like there's other like warlords out there.
Yeah.
And so it's like how does that work? Like is it tribes? Do you have like designated land?
No.
Like, or do you each have like, is it the bullet farm is like you sell ammo and it's trade, and in Morton Joe's the water guy.
Yeah.
You got the bullet guy.
That's kind of what I assumed. You got the water guy, you got the bullet guy, you got the gas guy.
Yeah. So it's like, but, like, what other guys are there? There's got to be other guys.
No, that's it. That's all you need to live.
There's got to be, like, a meat guy. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's just, it's, just the idea of where that world could go is so fascinating to me.
Yeah.
And it's not a world that anyone else can think up. It's like, yeah. It's George's world.
George is going to have to do this.
You got
to
do it, Georgie. Just, yeah. And it's I love the idea of it. Cause it's such an odd, and it's like a really good example of, one, complexity doesn't always mean quality. And two,
in terms of plot.
Yeah. In terms of plot.
Like the simplest plot.
Yeah. And then two, like a well-told story with characters that you're invested in, you'll go through a lot of weird stuff if you're properly attached to them.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, it was all real weird. And, like, and when it came down, like, the gas guy and, like, how the gas guy dies and just all the blood and just – it's so uncomfortable. Just everything about it is not – and, like – and then, like, you got the big muscly son that's attached to stuff, but then you have, like, the small one that's, like, just plugged into all these machines, and it's just – none of it looks comfortable. Like, none of it looks like – it's none of it's like, ooh, I wish I was there. It's all just very, like, ugh, I just want to stay away from it. But it's so fascinating, you have to watch.
This is like a movie where – you have such an incredibly good time while you're watching it, and you have just such a blast, and you're just thrilled and delighted and shocked and amazed and thrilled some more, and then when it's over, you're like, I'm so glad I live in my world.
Yeah, totally, absolutely. So I'm curious, was there anything in this movie that was disappointing, or that you would have changed, or that you weren't a fan of?
I thought that this movie was at its weakest every once in a while when there was, like, the dialogue in general, like, less is more, right? And there wasn't that much dialogue, and of the dialogue there was, some noticeable percentage of it wasn't very good. So I would say that I was happiest with this movie when no one was speaking, and every once in a while during a scene when there was a conversation, I just cringe a little bit here and there. I think it was a little on the nose, a little bit, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
But then again, like, the war boys talking to each other, generally speaking, awesome.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, great. when it was like really, really heightened and stylized, I was kind of like there, you know.
Yeah. With it. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Stylized is a good word for it.
Yeah.
I was like, I'm going through the movie scene by scene, and I just. Maybe it was the fact that I was so surprised, but there's not much I would change. Like, I know we were just going down into things, but I'm going way back up, and that is the first fight between Furiosa and Mad Max.
Oh my gosh.
With the chain that's attached to his face,
that's
the gun,
to a door.
The water that's attached to a door, and a dead guy, or a passed out guy. Yeah. Like, it's just all, like, and how they choreographed all of that.
Oh, my God.
Oh, it's just when he so finally, good.
When he finally, like, when him and the war boy, wow, what is his name? This is going to kill me.
Does he have, like, a name?
No, Nux. Nux, yeah. Nux. So when Nux, like, wakes up in the middle of that fight and then starts... like, helping Max.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't know yet. Like, he doesn't get yet that, like, Max might not be on his side. And, like, he yells, and I got it! And he's looking at the clip. And then they work together, and he, like, shoves the clip in while the other guy's holding it. And then he like, fires, like, three times around. He's like, the fight's over. Like, like you said, the choreographing of that scene was
so good.
So good.
Yeah,
oh,
so good.
Man.
Apparently I'm not done nerding out.
Will we ever be?
I love the fact that, like, the women all were you could almost like draw a logo for each one of the women. Like, they all had their own brand.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like you had, like, the weapons expert, and then you had, like, the plant lover that was, like, the soft, like, kind of the hippie, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was just one of those stylized details that just, it made it just so good. And it made you actually, like, really, like, fall for the characters.
Well, and the it's another design feature too, because, like, if you want, like, the contrast in Infinity is, like, the name of the game to communicate like visual theme and like and feeling in a film. So contrast and affinity. Obviously, we know what contrast is. Obviously, we know what affinity is. But like, so in this case, you've got the affinity of all these elements, the affinity of the cars with the war boys, mm-hmm. with the desert, with the, you know, it all feels like it fits together. And then the contrast of these like willowy, mm-hmm. like barely clothed, like perfect women, like in their just totally white, like flawlessly white, like clothes that are, I mean, they look like they don't belong there,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that makes it makes it so much more like it's a visual raising of the stakes. Like you say, oh, this is, if you want to feel like they're precious cargo, well, then you want it to feel like they would be easily tarnished or broken or damaged. And so they don't look like, they look like they're this otherworldly thing that like you have to keep safe. And so the way you do that is you design them so that they don't look like, you know
yeah.
what I mean?
Yeah,
they
absolutely.
Look like, they look like they'll just disintegrate if yeah. they're left out for too long.
Yeah.
Like you gotta keep them in the thing. You gotta keep them, or put them somewhere where it's green, for heaven's sakes.
Yeah.
Because if you leave them out there, they're just gonna dry out and die.
Yeah.
And that, like, that whole thing, a pregnant woman, you know?
Oh, yeah.
Like a pregnant woman with a totally bare stomach, mm-hmm. like in that environment. Like standing next to a war rig with like spikes jutting out of it, like that's it. You know, that's how you communicate those details.
And then the ability to like have these women, because it would have been really easy and really tempting to just be like, okay, all these women are really fragile. We have to keep them safe. Like, mm-hmm. like I'm saying, not visually, like
yeah,
actually yeah. making them fragile.
Yeah.
And easily hurt and easily, you know what I mean?
And whiny or
and
whatever.
Whiny, yeah, yeah. But it was very much like, no, we're giving the middle finger to Morton Joe. One of them's like a weapons expert, just like loading crap and just yeah. shooting things. And like they all had their distinct personalities that were reflected also in the design of it, which is just amazing that whole team. I know I keep saying George Miller, but like there's hundreds yeah. of people that make this movie. Just well done. Well done, well done, well done.
Yes.
You deserve 6 Oscars.
Take them all. Take all the Oscars.
Take all the Oscars.
Yeah. No, it's a fantabulous movie. I just want to keep talking about it.
I know. There are things
thinking about all these scenes. And,
so many things to nerd out about.
Oh, man. Like the last thing I want to say about this movie is that when you succeed so profoundly at something so fresh, one of the metrics of that success, I think, is the memeing that happens afterward.
Yeah,
and this movie has been memed to eternity.
Yes,
Shiny and Chrome.
Oh man.
Oh, what a lovely day.
Yeah.
Like all those moments that when you see him, and you know, you go back and watch the movie again, you see him, and you're like, of course. How could you not quote this movie?
Yeah.
How could you not think about this moment? It is so visceral, you know, and yeah. it hits you with such an incredible force that like you are going to be thinking about this forever.
Yeah.
Like good luck forgetting about that moment.
Yeah.
Good luck absolutely. Forgetting about Nicholas Holt's face when he says, "Well, what a lovely day."
Yeah, like, oh my gosh.
You're gonna,
dude, I quote that. I quote, yeah. "What a lovely day." Yeah. I quote that just all the time. you mentioned something in our Inception episode. One of our best. If you haven't heard it, go back and listen to it. Where you talk about how watching movies is like having a shared dream, which is what Inception was doing. You had a shared dream, and you can go on the journey with somebody, which is why we enjoy it so much, because it's so attractive to us, and we get to share it with somebody. This movie might be. Because my dreams are very cinematic, I must say. My wife has like Tim Burton on shrooms kind of dreams. That's not me. I have the dreams that are pretty much anchored in reality, and my point of view is a camera that I can go anywhere in the world that is created. So this movie for me, this Mad Max Fury Road movie, was probably the most dreamlike movie for me. That feeling of like sharing a dream with somebody, because of the visuals, because of the landscape, because of the color, because of the richness of the world.
Because he knows exactly when to go wide and when to get close.
Oh my gosh, yes. Yeah.
Because nobody knows dynamic cinematic language better than George Miller, apparently.
Yeah, and it just and that feeling of this is a dream, especially in the theater, which is why I saw it twice in the theater. I don't see a lot of movies twice in the theater. But that one I did because it was so big and I lived in that world so clearly. And I think it's why it made such an impression on me, because it was such a surreal feeling that I rarely get. I can't say enough good things about Mad Max Fury Road. If you haven't seen it, I don't recommend it. It's terrible. Obviously, that's what I'm saying.
Obviously, CJ hates this movie.
Obviously.
Let's hope for more, but let's also just observe a moment of gratitude that some movies like this actually exist. And it does, you know. This movie very much exists. Sort of against all odds, it exists.
Yeah.
Pretty awesome.
Honestly, against all odds.
Yeah.
And the guys on the dirt bikes jumping, dropping grenades.
Oh, man.
Anyway, we could go on and on, but we'll stop.
Yeah. You know what? Something that we haven't done in the past, and we will push this out a little bit more, so you'll hear about this again. If you have questions or comments about movies that we've covered, or questions about movies that we will cover, or anything like that, feel free to either record your question verbally and send us the audio file via email, or call the number. Is there a number on the website? I think there is.
There is a number on the website, yeah.
Call the number on the website.
There's a contact us button.
Yeah, there might be a contact number in the email too. I'm not sure. I'll double check. Anyway, call the number, leave a message, whatever. If we get audio of you asking your question or giving your comment, we'll probably put it on the show.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So just
and respond to it.
Yeah, obviously.
Obviously.
Well, maybe not.
depends
here's this
on,
comment
depends
from a viewer
if it's worthy.
from an audience. Here's a comment from a listener. And that's all. And okay.
That was a comment. Yeah. Let's move on.
Thank you for asking your question. All right. Now, what we're talking about today is, it's something that I think we would really enjoy doing. If you have any interest at all in being part of our show, sort of in a kind of like a slightly removed or remote way, that we can easily incorporate into an episode, we would love to do it.
It's so also like it doesn't have to be audio. Like if you want to email,
yeah, obviously like, if you have any like questions or comments or whatever that you want to just email, we'll read them and we'll talk about them on the show.
Yeah,
but if you want your voice to be on the show,
I don't think we've ever like said if you have questions, it's always if you have like a request. So no, if you have questions or comments, then
ask them.
CJ at realcontender.com. I am there.
Yeah.
Checking it every day. Tab is always open. Literally. When I'm at work, my tab is always open. It's like a door is always open. Yeah. But it's, you know, it's the email.
You should wear a shirt that says that.
My tab is always open. Yeah. That
you should embroider that on like a plaque that you put like in your living room.
Or just the first thing you see. You open the door to my living room and it's
my
like,
tab is
my
always
tab's
open.
Always open. Yeah.
Which I feel like just makes you sound like an alcoholic.
Not where my mind was going with it, but sure. My tab is always open.
Well, you know what, CJ? It's closing time.
Wow. Well done. Well done.
Thank you. So I would like to personally, just for myself, thank Michael Bonmiller for the music.
So. I too, personally, for myself, would like to thank Michael Bonmiller for the music.
Such a copycat.
Listen, if you're gonna just claim it for yourself, then it sounds like I'm a jerk and I'm not thanking you. You know what I mean? Everybody, please remember to collect movies like a nerd and rewatch them like a critic.
And cut.